Welcome to the LRIS Q&A podcast. This podcast features questions on public safety, labor, and employment issues submitted to us via our website, www.lris.com. Questions are answered by LRIS Director and noted labor attorney, Will Aitchison. LRIS and Will Aitchison do not provide any legal advice. Listeners to this podcast and visitors to the LRIS website should consult with their own lawyer for legal advice. LRIS is not a law firm, and our employees are not acting as your attorney. The information contained in this podcast and on LRIS.com is general legal information and should not be construed as legal advice to be applied to any specific factual situation. Today's question is as follows. Our police department has a history of being very liberal in allowing the use of comp time. Whenever a comp time request would require an overtime hire back, it has always been the practice that the comp time requester bears the burden of finding an officer willing to work for overtime or comp time to fill the hire back. Rarely has there ever been a problem finding an officer to fill the spot. Recently, the officer's bargaining unit has been suggesting that the burden to fill the comp time request falls on the supervisors to the point in which, if no one volunteers, then another officer should be ordered to work the shift of the comp time requester. Is this unduly disruptive?
Actually, this question is a lot more complicated than it might seem on the surface, and quite unfortunately, we don't have a terribly satisfactory answer to the question. So let's back up, first of all, and talk a little bit about comp time under the Fair Labor Standards Act. It's important to know the history to understand why it is we are where we are today. Comp time was not a legal form of compensation under the Fair Labor Standards Act until 1985. In 1985, we had the Supreme Court decide the case known as Garcia versus San Antonio Metropolitan Transit Authority. The Garcia decision held that Congress had the power to apply the FLSA to state and local governmental bodies. So all of a sudden, this law, the FLSA, which had been out there since 1938, this law was going to be applied to cities and counties and states. And many of the wage and hour practices of those public employers didn't conform to the FLSA. What resulted was that a coalition of cities, counties, states, and in some cases labor organizations went to Congress and petitioned for amendments to the FLSA that would allow them to continue or to only slightly modify these long-standing employment practices that would be illegal under the FLSA. And Congress reacted to that by passing a series of amendments in November 1985 to the FLSA. One of those amendments was Section 70. If you're counting, it's 29 United States Code, Section 2070. Section 70 authorizes the use of comp time. It's a very limited authorization. It only exists in the public sector. Comp time is still illegal in the private sector. And it only exists under very specified conditions. You can only accrue so much FLSA comp time. Then the employer has to pay cash for non-sworn employees. That cap is 240 hours for sworn employees. Sworn police, fire, and corrections officers, it's 480 hours. There's no use it or lose it comp time under Section 70. The employee must either be given the opportunity to use the time or be paid for it in cash. When the employee is paid for it, it has to be paid at time and a half, the regular rate of pay, including premiums. So there's all sorts of special rules about FLSA comp time that an employer has to follow if it's going to use comp time as a substitute for cash compensation for overtime. Well, one set of those rules concerns the circumstances under which comp time can be used. And this you'll find in Section 70, subsection 5 of the FLSA. And very early on, there was a controversy about what Section 705 meant. The statute itself is pretty straightforward and is only really one sentence long. And it uses terms that generally say that an employee must be allowed to use comp time within a reasonable period unless granting the employee's request to use comp time off will cause the employer undue disruption. Well, that gives us two terms, reasonable period and undue disruption, two terms that really beg for definition. And that's one of the things the Department of Labor does when it enacts rules, when it enacts its regulations, is that it gives definitions to terms, vague terms, that Congress has proposed. And the Department of Labor did so in the wake of the 1985 enactment of Section 70. Department of Labor passed, in particular, in this case what we care about, is Section 553.25 of Title 29 of the Code of Federal Regulations. This is where you'll find the Department of Labor's interpretation of what those phrases, reasonable period and undue disruption, mean. And what the Department of Labor has said, and I'm going to shorthand this, is that comp time is essentially like money in the bank for the employee. Once the employee has accrued FLSA comp time, the employee, provided the employee gives reasonable notice of the intent to use the comp time off, the employee must be granted that comp time off. Unless allowing the employee the time off causes the employer an undue disruption. So what's an undue disruption? The Department of Labor answered that in the comments to its regulations, and what the Department of Labor said was an undue disruption means that the employer can't meet its basic mission if it allows the employee the time off. It cited an example of a snowplow operator in a small town that wanted to use a comp time day off on a day when there was a blizzard. And that, to the Department of Labor, was an example of an undue disruption. Well, as the Department of Labor was considering these regulations, employers posed a question to the Department of Labor and suggested an answer. The question was, what if we have minimum staffing levels? And if we allow that employee the time off, we're going to go below minimum staffing and we're going to have to backfill with someone else on an overtime basis. Is that an undue disruption? And of course, the employers argued, yes, it is. That's an undue disruption. And the Department of Labor, in its regulations, in the commentary to the regulations, actually, said, no, employers, you're wrong. The fact that you have to backfill with another employee on an overtime basis is not an undue disruption that justifies the denial of comp time. You have to let that employee go. And if you have minimum staffing levels, well, then you'll have to backfill in order to meet those staffing levels. If you choose to do so, you're going to have to backfill with someone on an overtime basis. So that was the lay of the land in the mid to late 1980s. We had Section 70 that had been enacted, and then we had the Department of Labor weighing in on what these terms, reasonable period and undue disruption, meant. Well, of course, there's going to be litigation over the issue, and there was. And it has resulted now in four decisions from federal courts of appeal that are irreconcilable and hopelessly conflicting. The first two cases that came down came to us from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. This is a case called Houston Police Officers Association versus City of Houston. And the second case comes to us from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and this is called Mortenson versus County of Sacramento. The Fifth Circuit covers the area around Texas geographically. The Ninth Circuit covers the western portion of the United States. Both of these courts found that the Department of Labor misinterpreted the statute and refused to defer to the Department of Labor's opinion. The courts found that the statute was, in their words, unambiguous, and that what the statute really meant was that once the employee made a request to use comp time off, the employer had a reasonable period of time to grant or deny the request. In other words, these courts found that the phrase reasonable period didn't mean what the Department of Labor thought it meant, which was how much advance notice of the intent to use comp time need an employee give, but rather started a clock running for the employer in giving the employee time off. So let's take a very, very simple example. Let's say that I'm an employee and I want next July 1st off. And I want July 1st off because that's the date that my daughter will be graduating from law school. Under the Department of Labor's reading, if I give reasonable notice of the intent to take next July 1st off, so I give a couple of weeks notice or a couple of months notice, whatever it might be, the employer has to let me off on that day, unless allowing me to leave will cause an undue disruption. The way the Fifth and Ninth Circuit saw it is that when I put that request for comp time in, let's say I put it in on December 1, 2012, and I want July 1, 2013 off, that the employer has a reasonable period after December 1, 2012 to give me a day off. That day off doesn't have to be July 1. It can be some other day off, so long as the employer gives me a day off within a reasonable period of the date I made the request. And what's a reasonable period to these courts? Well, the Ninth Circuit said, in the County of Sacramento case, said within a year. So as long as the employer gives me a day off within a year, December 1, 2012, it is complied with Section 70 of the FLSA. Well, as I said, there are four Court of Appeals decisions. That's only the first two. The second two have said that's all wrong. The Department of Labor has it right. These two courts find that the phrases, reasonable period and undue disruption, are in fact not self-evident, the definition of those phrases, that they do require definition, and that that's a proper thing for an administrative agency like the Department of Labor to do, to supply those definitions. The cases are Beck versus City of Cleveland. That's a Sixth Circuit case, and that's the Sixth Circuit is in an area in the upper Midwest. The northern part of it is Ohio. And then I think probably the most important of the decisions and the most recent of them is from the Seventh Circuit. This is an area that includes Illinois and states that adjoin Illinois. This case is called Heitman versus City of Chicago. Both of those courts say, look, when you have an ambiguous statute, we defer to the administrative agencies, and the Department of Labor's opinion here is completely plausible and reasonable. And thus, when in my example that I've given, when I say on December 1, I want July 1 off, the employer has to give me July 1 off, not just a day, has to give me July 1 off unless it can prove that allowing me that day off will cause it undue disruption. And of course, the requirement that the employer backfill with someone else on an overtime basis is not an undue disruption. So, did that stop the skirmishing? No. Now we have four different courts of appeals around the country having different answers as to when employees are allowed to use comp time off. The Department of Labor actually got back into the mix in 2008, in the waning days of the Bush administration. The Bush administration Department of Labor proposed to amend the regulation and to specifically say that the Houston case and the County of Sacramento case were right, that in essence the employer controls when employees can use comp time. This was just a proposed regulation, and the Department of Labor never got around to adopting the proposed regulation before the Obama administration took office. Well, of course, with the Obama administration, we have a very different philosophy in the Department of Labor. And on August 11th of 2011, the Department of Labor withdrew the proposed amendment and in fact reiterated the Department of Labor's prior position as to comp time that the employee can select the day off when the employee wants to use comp time. All of that, of course, is by way of background to the question that was asked. The question that was asked in our case is, whose obligation is it to go out and find a substitute? And we don't find a direct answer to that anywhere in either the regulations or any of these court opinions, but I think it's pretty easy to predict what the result is going to be. If you're in a jurisdiction that follows the Department of Labor's view on this, if you're in the Sixth Circuit or the Seventh Circuit, in fact, I think really if you're any place other than the Fifth or the Ninth Circuit, because I don't think those two courts got this issue right for what it's worth. If you're in a jurisdiction that follows the Department of Labor, it's the employer's job to find a substitute. After all, it's the employer's minimum staffing rules that are causing the issue in the first place. Remember, the Department of Labor views comp time as money in the bank to the employee. And just like the employee can make a withdrawal from a savings account, the employee in the Department of Labor's view can make a withdrawal from a comp time account. And if the employer has a minimum staffing rule that requires the employer to bring somebody else in, well, then the employer is going to have to take the steps necessary to bring that individual in. Of course, if you're in the Fifth Circuit in the Texas area or the California area on the West Coast and you're following the contrary opinions, then the employer doesn't have to give the employee the time off, so it's not an issue at all.
That wraps up this edition of the LRIS Q&A podcast. As always, we hope you found it entertaining and informative. Remember, the contents of this podcast should not be construed as legal advice. Please consult your own attorney for legal advice on any specific situation.